The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 11, Text 1, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on April 1st, 1998, in Mumbai, India.
चरमसद्विशेषाणाम् अनेको संयुता सदा परमानुसविज्ञेयो निर्णाम ऐक्या भ्रमो यथा
अल्टिमेट आर्टिकल विच इज इंडिविजुअल एंड नॉट फॉर्म्ड इनटू अ बॉडी is called the atom. It exists always as an invisible identity. Even after the dissolution of all forms, the material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. The atomic description of the Srimad Bhagavatam is almost the same as the modern science of atomism. And this is further described in the Paramanuvad of Kannada. In modern science also, the atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. Srimad Bhagavatam is the full text of all descriptions of knowledge, including the theory of atomism. The atom is the minute, subtle form of eternal time. Maitreya Rishi, in this 11th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, is describing in scientific terms how the universe has been created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What appears with our eyes is very deceiving, because according to a particular species of life, due to our karmic activities of the past, we have particular ability perceive this world. So the eyes see reality according to a very relative conception. What we see is not actually what is there. Just like if you had eyes that had the power of a microscope, powerful microscope, when you would see the beautiful form of a woman or a handsome form of a man, you would not at all be attracted. What would you see? You would just see this whole conglomeration of atomic particles just moving around within these cells. Now we consider them tiny, but they would not be considered tiny. You would just see everywhere just all these moving forms of atoms colliding with one another, and neutrons and electrons and molecules. On a grosser level, you would see the body as just has hundreds and thousands of holes in every part of it, with hairs coming out of those holes. Would you be attracted by such a thing? If you are attracted to your husband or wife, look at their skin under a microscope and see how your lusty desires awaken. It's abominable. So somehow or other, by the power of Maya, our eyes have been programmed in such a way to see this body on a certain level that appears attractive. We see nice, soft skin and muscles. Just like when you look into a lover's eyes, you think, oh, your eyes are so beautiful, like pools of nectar. how much lovers like to look in each other's eyes. But look at the person's eye under a microscope. You will not be at all attracted. It's terrible. There's all sorts of mucous membranes and watery substances and everything else. So in this way, by the power of Maya, we have been programmed in such a way to see just a very, very limited perception of the reality of what we're actually looking at. When we look at a person's body, we just see nice, soft, smooth skin. We do not see all of these atoms and all these hairs and all these holes and all the different crevices and all the different cells crashing into each other. So what actually is reality? Actually, material illusion, Maya, means that which is not. Not only are we misidentifying ourselves with something we are not this material body. We are the eternal soul, nor are we this material mind. But due to the subtlemost element of material existence called the false ego, our mind is affected by the three modes of material nature, and therefore we are identifying with this body, which really we have nothing to do with except a temporary residence. So first of all, the Maya illusion is that we think we are this body, and we think that those people's bodies who are near and dear to us are our friends, our relatives, family members. But even within that misconception, we're in such illusion. First of all, identifying with this body is an illusion because we are not this body. But then even the conception of what our body is an illusion. Srila Prabhupada explains, if you cut just hardly a millimeter under the skin, what do you see? You will see blood, and you will see mucus and pus and bones and marrow and all sorts of other stool and urine type substances. It's not at all attractive. It's just packaged in such a way to deceive you in advertising. People know that this is a very important method of attracting people. It is called packaging. In India, it's becoming like that. In the West, it's a very, very refined art. You package something in such a way that people don't really see what's inside. They only see what it appears. And there's so much competition between products. And people very rarely look into the actual content of something. Just like if there's a box of some sort of food, and it will say on it, 16 ounces, that is the measurement of weight in the Western world. That's how much food is in the box. So one company will make the box 1.5 times bigger, and it'll still say 16 ounces in very small, small print. But because the box is 1.5 times bigger, and 1/3 of the box is empty, people will buy that because the box is bigger. You get the same amount as the smaller box, but you'll buy it because you think it's better, it's bigger. Or something else, it may be the same exact quality. Two items. One is in a beautiful, beautiful packaging, and one is just in a very simple type of a bag. What will people buy? Intelligent people will see what's inside. They're charging me twice as much for this nice packaged one, and half as much for the one not in a nice package. But still, probably 95% of the population will pay twice as much for the packaging. So advertising means you try to attract people by how you make things appear. That's even more important than what the substance of the particular product is. Advertisement agencies do not concern themselves with the content. They're only concerning themselves with the appearance of the product, how it's conceived by the eye. So please understand that this is the same way Maya is somehow or other trying to sell us to accept the process of sense gratification. And the price is very high. The advertisers, when they are trying to sell us something, they may charge 50 rupees, 100 rupees, and they'll take that much from us by attracting our senses, by what the appearance of this object. And they'll try to convince you intellectually that you need it. You have to have it. If you do not have it, you will not have a full life. So similarly, Maya packages everything in such a way just to attract our mind, and she will create a whole social psychology to convince you that you need this product. You have to have this type of sense gratification. And what is the price? The price is your human existence. You have to sell your soul to Maya just to enjoy these objects of so-called pleasure. So in this way, the packaging of material nature, as Maya has done, appears so attractive. But actually, what's inside this package of material body that we are so lusty for? You just open the package slightly. Just open the person's mouth and look inside. Cut open any part of the body and see what's inside. You're not at all attractive. You're disgusted. In fact, we have seen with our own eyes people, they're so much madly attracted to the body of someone. But if that person gets in some sort of an automobile accident and it just cuts open some of that body and some of the parts start coming out, the same lover will start vomiting. They can't tolerate seeing it. It's abominable. So what's inside is abominable to our senses, and what's outside is actually abominable. It's just we only see it with a certain type of eye that we can't see too big or too small. In this way, what is the reality of material existence? It is all completely relative to our power to perceive it. Here it is explained that the whole material creation, all bodies, everything, is comprised of atomic particles. Atomic particles are here described as indivisible. They are not destroyed like the body. Ultimately, everything's manifestations appear to be destroyed. But it is explained here, it exists always as an indivisible identity, even after the dissolution of all forms. So these little atomic particles cannot be seen by the eye, but everything is just made of the building blocks of these atoms. And it describes here, what is time? Time is the influence that Krishna creates of time moving the atomic particles. That is actually how everything is being destroyed, just by the influence of time, just moving these atomic particles in different ways. And we cannot see what's actually being moved, but the effect we see as things are changing constantly. We see a very gross manifestation of that change. But how the change is actually taking place on a finer, subtler, and more accurate level is being described here. Time is moving the atoms around. Hare Krishna. So what is death? It's just some atom being moved around. And then the body's no longer fit and the soul leaves it. What's so terrible about that? One of my godbrothers, I remember, he was giving a lecture to some scientists, and they were saying, actually, life is just chemicals. They cannot accept the soul. Life is just chemicals. In this human form of existence, we are alive because the chemicals are in proper functioning order to give life. And when there's a gross imbalance in the chemicals, then there is death. My godbrother said, then why if someone dies, your mother, your father, your wife, your husband, why you're crying? Why it's such an emotional condition? Why when you're in your laboratory and you throw all chemicals down the drain, why you don't cry? Life is just chemicals, so when you throw chemicals down the drain, why you're not crying? If all it is just the chemicals are gone that are giving life, we're crying over chemicals. Who is the person? That is the soul. However, somehow or other, the soul has identified itself with this gross matter and subtle matter. And the gross matter is here being described so wonderfully in its ultimate state within the manifest universe, which is the atom. It is so small. Even the illusion is when we see a big, big mountain, we're thinking, this is so big. But actually, what is the mountain? It's just innumerable billions of trillions of quadrillions of these little tiny atoms just making up this form. But actually, the atoms are everywhere. The whole universe, on the physical level, simply innumerable atoms, little tiny particles created by Krishna, the smallest particle. But Krishna is smaller than the smallest. Mahato Mahiyan Anato Aniyan. Mahato Mahiyan means he's the biggest of the big. You know Mahavishnu, how, you don't know him, but you've heard of him, how big he is. These universes compared to him are like little atoms. How big is the pores of your body? Do the scientists or the medical researchers, they come up with a number, how many pores are on the human body? Vaishnav Seva Prabhu. Have they ever counted? They are not so advanced. How many pores are in the human body? Madhavananda Prabhu, you're a medical man. Can you approximate? 100,000, million, nobody knows. So Mahavishnu, his pores, you can't even see a pore. You have to look so carefully under a microscope to see a pore. Otherwise, how ugly people would be if you saw their pores, just holes and hairs everywhere. You would think, what happened to you? You have holes all over your body. It's disgusting. Terrible complexion. How many pores? They're so small you can hardly see them. Mahavishnu, from his every pore of his body, practically universes are coming out. He is bigger than the biggest. But that same Mahavishnu is also smaller than the smallest. Because the Paramatma is in and between every atom. And it's not that he's crowded in the atom. Like in the Indian railway system during the rush hour. It's not that he's all crowded in. He has plenty of room. He's so small within the atom that it's like the spiritual world. Like a little Vaikuntha. This is the glory of Krishna. He's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. And he is the supreme controller, Sarveshwareshwara, of everything that exists. From outside and inside, he is making all movement take place. He is the controller of all energies, the spiritual energy and the material energy. Maya is the external material energy of the Lord. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. It is moving under the direction of Krishna. So ultimately, the illusions that we are perceiving things in such a way, and the mind is becoming so agitated and disturbed by these apparent manifestations, it's all happening by Krishna's power. Otherwise, how is it that the eternal soul, full of knowledge and bliss, part of Krishna, who has an original spiritual form in the spiritual world, which is just the source of all love, devotion, and happiness, how could that soul be identifying with this bag of stool, urine, and everything else? And ultimately, what is the stool and urine, and what is the nice flesh you see? It's all just atoms. Just formed in different ways. It's really all the same substance. Hare Krishna. You may be thinking, if you are a materialistic person and you go to a restaurant and you see some very nice halwa, you're thinking, oh, this looks so good. My mouth is filled with saliva. I want to eat it so bad. In India, you see these things. Then you see outside the store, stool laying on the side of the road. And your mouth is not getting all watery with saliva. Rather, your stomach starts to pushing up what you've eaten this morning. You feel vomiting sensations. So what is the difference between the stool and the halava? If you have microscopic vision, you'll just see atoms. They're both just atoms. That's all. They're the same thing. The will of the supreme super soul, who's the controller of all material existence, he's just arranged it in a certain way, the same substance to appear like earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And the different combinations of these five elements appear to be different types of substances, but actually they're the same elements. So it's such an illusion that we're attracted to something and we're averse to something else. It's only because of the limited perception of our senses. And we become mad after these things. These atoms happen to appear in a certain way with a certain combination of earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and it's a very nice food, and we're lusty at anything for that food. But those same atoms, different combination of them, is a floor. We're not lusty for the floor. But really, what is the difference? It's only our relative perception. Material nature is such an illusion. Prabhupada would sometimes explain that just like a magician makes things appear to be a certain way, but actually it's not like that. That Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, famous magician, regularly performs. Sarakar? Yes? P.C. Sarakar, Hare Krishna. Very famous magician. And his father was a more famous magician. And they can make so many things appear, but actually what it appears to our senses is not at all what it is. If you know the science, you're not fooled by it. Just like they're cutting a woman in half. The woman lays there and they show that there's nothing inside. Everything is exactly according to your perception. There's no tricks. And then they saw her in half. And people in the audience are thinking, oh my God, they're sawing her in half. She will die. And then after they saw her in half, they put something in front and then she jumps up and starts dancing. So actually, was she cut in half? Not at all, but it appears to your senses due to the tricks, the manipulation of your ability to see. Recently, there's a very, very famous magician in America. And he called thousands of people to New York City. And he said, I am going to make the Statue of Liberty disappear right before your eyes. Hare Krishna. Thousands of people were at the harbor of the Hudson Bay. Have you heard of the Statue of Liberty? It's very famous. It was an offering to America by the French government hundreds of years ago. It's one lady who's holding up a flame and she's holding a book and she's called the Statue of Liberty. It's very big, big, big size, 160 feet. So, it's a very famous place, and it's in the middle of the water. It's surrounded on all four sides by water. To get to it, you have to take a boat. Hare Krishna. So there's not much you can do with the Statue of Liberty. But this man, he is so expert at the art of deceiving that thousands of people were standing in the harbor. And he said, today you will see right before your eyes, I will make the Statue of Liberty disappear. Hare Krishna. And they were all saying, we have seen magicians, they cut a woman in half, but actually there's two women in a box in different sides, so we're not fooled by that. And then all of a sudden, he had these helicopters. And then the helicopters dropped the curtain, and Statue of Liberty was gone. She went somewhere else. Everyone was going, oh, he did it. He actually made her disappear. Some people were worried, what will happen to our country? Liberty has been taken away. And then everyone was worried. People were about to commit suicide. The Statue of Liberty is gone. Did he put her in the ocean? And then he had the helicopters bring up the curtain again, and then the helicopters dropped the curtain, and there was the Statue of Liberty standing like this. How is that possible? For him, it's nothing. He has some tricks. He doesn't tell his tricks. If he tells his tricks, no one will want to see it. Because if you know something, it's not attractive. If you know how a person is cutting a woman in half, what the trick is, how there's two different people, one's legs and one's head is in two different sides, then it's not attractive. You don't pay your money to see it. But if you do not understand, it is very, very attractive because it's an illusion. So how Krishna is such a magician, this whole material existence, he makes everything to appear a certain way, but it is all Maya. It means that which is not. What you are seeing, what you are hearing, what you are tasting and smelling, what you are feeling is not what actually is there. But it's packaged in such an illusory way that we become so attracted to it. Actually, if devotees who understood carefully the philosophy of Krishna consciousness wanted to go into the advertising business, my God, how we could deceive people to be attracted if we actually know how Maya is working. All we have to do is just follow in her footsteps. And that is what the world is doing. Maya means that which is not. So here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, through Maitreya Rishi, in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is revealing a subtler reality of gross matter. How subtle is the atom? These atoms are composing everything of the gross level of consciousness. Cannot perceive it. But subtler than the atom is the mind. Subtler than the mind is the intelligence. And the subtle most of all material elements is the false ego, ahankar. Krishna, as the super soul within and without everything, he is controlling everyone. Actually, even the tiniest particle of an atom is a universe in itself. The Lord is seated within the atom. It's like a universe. And then this material body that we have, it is like a universe. So the Paramatma is so subtle, he's within these little universes. And then there is the Garbhodakshai Vishnu. He's seated within the big universe that we're living in. And then there's Mahavishnu, who is the controller of the whole cosmic manifestation. So the same principles of creation are taking place from the smallest to the biggest of everything within the cosmic creation. So to understand reality can only be possible by the grace of Krishna. Daiviyeshu gunamayi mamamaya durakyaya. How is it that Sripad Jamuna Acharya, he was a great king, and he was very attached to seeing beautiful women. He was very attracted to that which stimulated his sex desires. But then, after he became a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, after he surrendered his heart to the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, he prayed that sex attraction, which was so appealing to my heart, now that I have tasted the nectar of devotion to Krishna, when I think of sex life, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought. Srila Prabhupada says, spite at the thought. How is that possible? The whole Maituna Agara, that means this whole material existence is revolving around the principle of sex attraction. Everyone is shackled by these desires. Srila Prabhupada explains, what is the meaning of liberation? Very simple terms. Liberation means no more sex desire. As long as you have sex desire, you are bound by birth, old age, disease, and death. Where there is no sex desire, there is no birth, old age, disease, and death. There is liberation. The whole material existence is keeping people in bondage on the basis of this principle. So how is it that it can possibly be overcome? It is the most powerful force within material existence. If we surrender to Krishna, he is the one who creates this illusion. He's the magician that shows this is what appears to be happening. It's a reality. And we're thinking it's real, it's real. And we're becoming so emotional about it. We're becoming depressed. We're becoming elated. All of these dualities of our emotional conditions in our mind is so much identifying and being affected by what appears to be a reality. However, when Krishna reveals what it actually is, we're disgusted by it. Hare Krishna. Jamunacharya, he was so attracted to sexual impetuses. But when he got the mercy of Krishna by surrendering, Krishna just said, all right, I'm the magician, I'll show you what my trick is now. And you will not be attracted, you will not be deceived by it anymore. And then you see everything for what it is. Mucus, bile, air, gaseous substances, that's all it is. And I've been attracted to these things. I spit at the thought, my lips curl in distaste. Because Krishna has revealed the inner secret of his trick of illusion. Unless Krishna reveals it, we cannot come out of this illusion. The scientists have tried to figure out in so many ways. Just like when someone goes to see P.C. Sarakar, everyone's speculating. Maybe he has done it like this. No, maybe he has done it like this. Maybe he has done it like this, but perhaps like this. But nobody knows because he's so expert. And everyone just keeps paying their money to see it again and again because they cannot figure it out. So similarly, the mundane scientists and technologists, they are making so many hypotheses and theories. Maybe this creation is working like this. Perhaps it is like this. So many analyses. But they cannot understand what's happening. They're deceived. They're in illusion. They're covered over. But then when the magician says, now I will show you. This is actually how I did it. And you're not attracted. When Krishna reveals material nature for what it is, there's no attraction. But when he covers it and makes it in his very, very expert magicianal way to appear something that is not Maya, that which is not, then we become so much attracted to something and so much averse to something else. When we see a very ugly person who has all sorts of deformations or different diseases, we think, oh, this is terrible, I cannot look. But actually, it's the same atoms that are in a beautiful person. Just different packaging, illusion. Therefore, a devotee who gets the mercy of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita explains, he is not elated or he is not depressed. He is free from dualities due to the material stimulus. He doesn't become lusty for something beautiful. He doesn't become disgusted for something ugly. He sees for what it is. You cannot see it unless Krishna's mercy is upon you. Therefore, the only way by which we can become disentangled from that network of illusions that are causing all sufferings of the repetition of birth and death is to receive the mercy of Krishna. The conclusion of all of these wonderful descriptions, which are in such minute scientific detail in Srimad Bhagavatam, is you must surrender to Krishna. Even though theoretically we are reading these things, the jnanis, they theoretically know what is the atomic particles. They theoretically know what the body is made out of, what is beyond the thin layer. They see how this world is full of so many transformations. They know it with their mind. Srimad Bhagavatam explains it because if we know it with our intelligence, then we will take shelter of Krishna to go beyond it. But the jnanis, they know it with their intelligence, but because they are not taking shelter of Krishna, they theoretically, intellectually know things quite well about the illusory nature of this world, but they can't get out of the entrapments of the attachments and aversions to this world. They cannot. It is impossible. Because only by the mercy of Krishna can we be freed from the shackles of illusion. Only he who has created the illusion can take you out of the illusion. No one else can do it. The Bhagavatam describes the people of this material world, even the great scholars and professors and government officers and family members, they are all fallible soldiers. They cannot help you to come out of this illusion. They cannot save you from death. What is death? Death is an illusion. There's no such thing as death. The soul is eternal. The elements of the body are not dead. They're just transforming into a different combination. There's no such thing as death. But yet, we are so afraid of death. And when one of our loved ones appears to die, we are so taken back with grief. There's no such thing as birth. When we have a new child, we're saying, oh, so nice, come, let me give you sweetmeats to celebrate the birth of this child. The child's not born. Atomic elements have always been there. The soul has been there. So the reality of this material illusion is so expertly and perfectly conducted by Krishna that no one except him can free you from the illusion. Therefore, Krishna is our only real friend. Krishna says in Gita, Bhoktaram jagatata samsarava lokamaheswaram suradam sarava bhutanam jatvamam shanti. If you want to be peaceful, only Krishna can make you peaceful, no one else. Not the wealthiest man in the world or the most powerful hero can make you peaceful, only Krishna. Because no one can take you out of the illusion except the manufacturer of the illusion himself. And Krishna says, this is how you're peaceful. You must understand and realize that he is the supreme proprietor of all planets and all things in all planets. That everything is ultimately meant for his enjoyment. And that he is the best, supreme, most well-wishing friend of everyone. He is our only real friend because he's the only one who can dispel the illusion of Maya. So therefore, sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam praja aham tvam sarva papebho moksha ishami master. If we surrender to Krishna, he can relieve us of all the illusions. We were discussing Jamunacharya. What a transformation when he surrendered to Krishna. He saw the whole world as it is, and he saw Krishna as he is. And he was ecstatically attracted to remember Krishna, chant Krishna's name, think of Krishna and serve Krishna at all times. And he had no more any desire to exploit the resources of material nature because he received the mercy of Krishna. I see on the board, April 1st, Sripad Ramanuj Acharya Avirbhav. That's today. The most glorious and famous of all the disciples of Sri Jamunacharya, Sripad Ramanuja Acharya, who came in the disciplic succession of Lakshmi Devi, one of the four authorized disciplic successions amongst Vaishnavas. So we do not have so much time, but it is very purifying and stimulating to our devotional service to hear something about these great personalities on these auspicious days. Ramanujacharya, he exhibited the very perfection of devotion in such a spirit of humility and knowledge. He transformed the lives of so many thousands, hundreds and thousands, millions of people during his life. And even on these days, so many centuries later, the influence of his teachings and his example is still awakening bhakti, devotional sentiments in people. Anyone who hears the life of Ramanujacharya, their hearts will naturally melt with great appreciation for his Vaishnava qualities. It is described that Ramanujacharya wanted to teach so many things to the world about what is real devotion. He transformed so many people's hearts. And by hearing of his life and teachings, our hearts will be transformed. When he was young, he accepted Jamunacharya as his spiritual master. And when Jamunacharya was very, very old, he gave his last instructions to his disciples. And then he was performing his pastime of leaving this world. So the message came to Ramanujacharya that Jamunacharya has decided to leave this world. Although Jamunacharya was the Shiksha Guru of Ramanujacharya, and we generally consider that Jamunacharya was his guru because he was so prominent, he actually took initiation from Mahapurna, who was a disciple of Jamunacharya. And he took so many lessons from other great, great disciples of Jamunacharya, and he considered all these people his gurus. So when he went there in great haste, on his way, Jamunacharya had already given up his body. When Ramanujacharya appeared on the bank of the holy river Kaveri, Jamunacharya's body was laying, and all of his disciples and the people of Srirangam were weeping and crying in separation from this great devotee. People were very much lost. When the spiritual master leaves the world, it is the most painful situation, because he is the light in our life. And when he leaves, it appears that the whole world is cast into an abyss of darkness. But Ramanujacharya was so dear to Jamunacharya that people looked at him with hope in their eyes. Meanwhile, Ramanujacharya noticed something that nobody else was able to perceive. That Jamunacharya, three of his fingers were very tightly clenched in his hand. So Sripad Ramanuja, he asked the people, did Jamunacharya ordinarily keep his fingers so tightly clenched like this? They said, no, he never did this. His fingers would always be loose and straight. Then Ramanujacharya understood that in Jamunacharya's life, although he had accomplished so many great things, there were three purposes he left unfulfilled. Ramanujacharya said, I will travel throughout the entire land of India, Bharatvarsha, and I will spread the doctrine of pure devotional service to Lord Narayan. I vow to do this. At that time, one of the fingers of Jamunacharya opened and became straight. Then Ramanujacharya said, I will write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra establishing Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and completely defeat all misconceptions of the Brahmavadis and Mayavadis. At that time, the second finger opened up. In honor of the great, great sage, the father of Vedavyas, Parasara Muni, who wrote the great Vishnu Purana, I will name a disciple, Parasara. Then his third finger opened up. People were struck with wonder. They understood that Jamunacharya, he left three things unfulfilled that he wanted to achieve in life for Ramanujacharya to fulfill. Ramanujacharya returned to his home near Kanchipuram, but the disciples of Jamunacharya were so much struck with great grief at the disappearance of their guru that they literally begged Ramanujacharya to come and take the position of the acharya. So on the loving requests of these devotees, Ramanujacharya came, and in great humility, with a desire to serve the order of the Vaishnavas, he took the position of the acharya in the disciplic line after Jamunacharya. But still, he would serve his own gurus and serve the Vaishnavas with such humility. It is described how one time a Brahmin came to Ramanujacharya and said, I want to perfect my life by purifying my heart through serving you. Please give me some service. I have come a long way just to beg you to allow me to be your servant. Ramanujacharya said, oh, yes, it is my great longing to become purified by the water that washes the feet of a Brahmin. Therefore, every day after I take my lunch prasad, you should let me take the water that has washed your feet. This is my order to you.
Hare Krishna.
So this Brahmin was so simple and so pure. He was thinking in his heart, I offered my life in the service of Ramanujacharya, and now he's giving me this service. How can I refuse it? No doubt, if you put your feet on a superior Vaishnav, it's a great offense. You may even go to hell. However, he didn't consider heaven or hell. He only considered, it is what my Guru Maharaj wants. So every day he would collect water that he would wash his feet with and give it to Ramanujacharya, who would respectfully sprinkle it on his head. One day, Sripad Ramanujacharya went to one disciple's house and took prasad with some of the other disciples. Then he began to speak philosophy of Vaishnavism. And he was speaking so eloquently, the devotees were struck with wonder. They asked him so many relevant questions, and they all lost track of time as he was speaking and answering questions. And soon it was late at night. They spent all day in this way. He came back to the ashram with a few of his disciples. Everyone in the ashram was sleeping. It was all dark, but that one Brahmin was standing there. Ramanujacharya said, what are you doing here? It's so late. He said, it is my service to you that at noon I'm supposed to give you foot wash. But you didn't come all day, and I will never eat any food myself until I perform my service to you. So this Brahmin was fasting all day long until the late hours of night because he wouldn't eat until he gave his foot wash to Ramanujacharya. It is my service. When Ramanujacharya saw how much this devotee, this Brahmin, was so simple and pure in his desire to please him, that Ramanujacharya embraced him. Then he took the foot wash and he personally drank it and said, your purity of your desire to selflessly serve is purifying me. On another occasion, Ramanujacharya was preaching so strongly, completely obliterating Mayavad philosophy. The Mayavad philosophy teaches that everything is Maya, except Brahman, the formless, impersonal existence of the Supreme. Therefore, Krishna is Maya. The Lord, when he descends to this world, his pastimes is Maya, his name is Maya, his form is Maya, his abode is Maya, everything is Maya. When the Lord appears in this world, he appears in mode of goodness and assumes a temporary form, just like you take a thorn to take another thorn out of your body. Similarly, the Mayavad conception is that disease is due to attachment to form and personality. Therefore, the Lord comes into the realm of form and personality just to deliver us from our misconception that there's any reality to form and personality. So our attachment to these things is the thorn, and Krishna assumes the position. The Lord assumes like a thorn to take the thorn out. But then after you take the thorn out with another thorn, do you keep either thorn? You throw them both away because they're both thorns. So similarly, you worship the deity. You chant the holy names. You read the scriptures. You perform service. They call it bhakti. But after performing these activities by the mercy of the Lord, we are freed from our misconceptions that we are this body, that we have anything to do with this world of illusion. And then after we are liberated,
then we don't need the deity, we don't need Harinam, we do not need the Vaishnavas, we don't need the scriptures. They're all ultimately illusion. They're temporary. This is Mayavad philosophy. Through this Mayavad philosophy, there is no hope of awakening real love within our hearts. It is only through bhakti. And bhakti is the constitutional nature of the soul. So Sripad Ramanujacharya was so strongly preaching the principles of bhakti. No one could defeat him. He was becoming famous throughout the land. There was one greatest of all scholars of the Mayavad school. His name was Yajnamurti. He traveled all around the entire India, challenging everyone to debate on any level. And he would totally defeat them. In fact, this Yajnamurti, wherever he would travel, he would take a whole cart of his scriptures and books of logic. Hare Krishna. He wouldn't go anywhere without his scriptures and books of logic. So he heard about Ramanujacharya. He was converting so many people to the personal conception of Vaishnavism. He was thinking, I must do away with this rascal's good name and fame. If I defeat Ramanujacharya, then Mayavad philosophy will be supremely accepted by everyone.
Hare Krishna.
So he approached Ramanuja and he said, I want to challenge you to a debate. Ramanujacharya was so humble. He said, I am just an insignificant, simple man. And you are such a great and famous logician and scholar. I cannot debate against you. You will certainly defeat me. Therefore, I admit defeat. You can tell everyone you defeated me, no problem. He was so humble. He didn't want just to argue with someone for the sake of argument. He said, you go and tell anyone you want that you defeated me. I accept defeat. You are superior to me. So Yajnamurti, he was not satisfied with only that, acceptance of defeat. He said, if you actually admit defeat at my feet, then you must accept the Mayavad philosophy and preach it. If I defeat you, that means you must surrender to my opinion. So you become monist. Ramanujacharya was not able to do that. He was so utterly humble, but that he could not do, give up the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, he had no other choice than to debate him. This man was such a master at debate that neither one could defeat the other with words. The debate went on for 17 days, all day, every day. On the 17th night, Ramanujacharya was so despondent. I cannot defeat him. His jugglery of words is so expert, I cannot in words prove that I'm right. So he was very despondent, very sad, that his purpose was to protect the pure teachings of Vaishnavism. But he was not able to do so. This man was so expert, he was so intelligent, so deeply rooted in his understandings of the scriptures with misconception. So Sripad Ramanujacharya went to his deity in his ashram that night. The deity's name was Devaraj. And he prayed to Bhagavan Devaraj that, please, give me the power to defeat this person. Vaishnava philosophy will be discredited. Thousands and millions of people in the world will turn against your loving service and not achieve the shelter of your lotus feet unless I can defeat this person. Then Devaraj spoke to Ramanujacharya. That night he spoke to him. He said, tomorrow you will be victorious. Do not fear anything. So Ramanujacharya became very happy. The next day, the 18th day, they were supposed to continue their debate. So Ramanujacharya walked to the ashram where Yajnamurti was staying, and he was effulgent.
He was so blissful because Lord Narayan told him that you will win the debate. You have nothing to fear. Just by having that vision of the Lord appearing before him and speaking, he was so full of ecstatic love. It was just vibrating out of his body. So Yajnamurti saw him coming. He was effulgent. He was so blissful looking. He was like the embodiment of ecstasy. He was thinking, how is this possible? Last night when he left my ashram after the bait, he was completely depressed and despondent because he couldn't defeat me. Why all of a sudden today he's shining bright with ecstasies? I've never seen such love emanating from anyone before in my life. What am I doing arguing with this person? I should surrender to him. So Ramanujacharya said, now let us continue our debate. Yajnamurti fell at Ramanujacharya's lotus feet and said, I surrender to you. I accept defeat. Ramanujacharya said, how is this possible? I didn't even say anything. Then Ramanujacharya understood that what was impossible became possible by the mercy of Devaraj, the deity of Lord Narayan. Otherwise, how is it possible? By his mercy, this man's heart was changed. Ultimately, no one can understand Krishna consciousness without the mercy of Krishna. This is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. No one can understand who the Lord is unless they receive the mercy of the Lord. You could read the scriptures till the end of time and never understand the purpose of life or how to achieve it. Only when we receive the mercy of the Lord, which comes through his devotees. So Yajnamurti begged Ramanujacharya, I have completely spoiled my life with this useless Mayavad philosophy. I have just been propagating illusion. Therefore, today I want to surrender to you and take initiation. So Ramanujacharya gave him initiation and gave him the name Devaraj Muni, because he was delivered by the mercy of Devaraj. Now, this scholar was an ocean of false ego before he surrendered to Ramanujacharya. He was so inflated in his false pride, no one could compare. This man thought he knew everything. And it's very, very, very difficult to become humble when you are learned in material sense. The biggest egoistic attachment is to think, I know. So one time, four very sincere Brahmins came to Ramanujacharya and said, we want to surrender to you and take initiation from you. Ramanujacharya said, actually, it is my instruction to you that you should take initiation from this great devotee named Devaraj Muni, because he is not only the most learned in understanding all the scriptures so, so deeply. Actually, Devaraj Muni, immediately after taking initiation, he understood that he had such a depth of understanding of the scriptures, as soon as he got the right conception that it's all talking about devotion to Krishna in his transcendental form, he became the most learned Vaishnava practically. Ramanujacharya told him to start writing books. To this day in the Sri Sampradaya, two of the books of Devaraj Muni are considered classics that they all study very carefully. So when these four Brahmins approached Ramanujacharya, he told them that Devaraj Muni is the greatest scholar of the scriptures, and he's also a pure, unalloyed devotee of Lord Narayan. You should take initiation from him and become his disciples. Following this instruction, the four Brahmins approached Devaraj Muni and said that we have come to surrender to you and be your disciple. In fact, Sripad Ramanujacharya has ordered us to take initiation and become your disciple. When Devaraj Muni heard this, he became very, very fearful. He went to Ramanujacharya, fell at his guru's lotus feet, and said, please, don't do this to me. I've already spent my whole life completely infatuated by false ego.
Everywhere I went, people were worshiping me and touching my feet and showing honor to me. I don't want any more in any way, shape, or form. If they accept me as guru, they will worship me. They will honor me. They will glorify me. I only want to be the insignificant, menial servant of you, my Guru Maharaj. Ramanujacharya, when he saw the utter humility of Devaraj Muni, he said, I just sent them to you to test you. I wanted to see whether you had any desire still left in your heart for adoration, glorification, or anything else. Because one who is very learned is very difficult to be humble. But you have passed the test. Therefore, you stay with me and be my servant. For the rest of Ramanujacharya's life, Devaraj Muni never took any other position but the very, very humble, menial servant of Ramanujacharya, never aspiring for any other position or glorification throughout his life. On another occasion, Ramanujacharya was in Sri Rangam with his devotees, and he decided to go to Sri Shaila, or Tirupati. He wanted to visit also. So he took some of his followers. And, of course, in those days, it was many days of walking. They came to one village. When they came to that village, Ramanujacharya had two disciples. One was a very, very wealthy merchant whose name was Yagesh. He lived in a big mansion. So he waited at the outskirts of the city. And he told his disciples, you go to Yagesh's house and tell him that I am coming and I would like to stay with him and take prasad. So the two disciples of Ramanujacharya went to Yagesh's house and said, the great Acharya Ramanuja, your Guru Maharaj, he wants to come and take prasad at your home. So Yagesh was so happy. He just started calling his servants and calling his assistants and making all wonderful arrangements to cook a big, delicious feast and to make all nice decorations and everything that would be pleasing to welcome Sripad Ramanujacharya. He was so busy and absorbed in all of that, but he was so much thinking in terms of worshipping his Guru Maharaj that he completely forgot about the needs of the two servants that just came to give him the information. He didn't even give them a sitting place or water. He neglected them. So the two servants went back to Ramanujacharya. And he asked, what happened? Oh, he's making all grand arrangements to receive you. And how did he receive you? He was too busy making arrangements for you. He didn't do anything for us. Ramanujacharya said, I will not go to his house. I have another disciple named Bharadrajacharya. Let us go to his house. Now this disciple was very, very poor. He had no money, anything. Every day he would go out for several hours to beg alms from various people's houses. And his wife would be alone at home. Sripad Ramanujacharya and his disciples arrived at his house as he was out begging. His wife's name was Lakshmi. She was very chaste and very, very beautiful. So when she saw her Guru Maharaj standing before her at the door, she was so much happy that he had come. She said, oh, Guru Maharaj, please take your bath and I will prepare prasad and offer it to Narayan. Then she went in her kitchen, and they were so poor, there was not even a single grain of rice anywhere in the house. So she was thinking, my Guru Maharaj has come, and I do not even have anything to serve him. But then she began to think, there was one very, very, very wealthy businessman who was a very sinful rascal. He had so much money, power, influence, and he also had so much unfulfilled, lusty desires. He was so much attracted to Lakshmi's
physical beauty. On many occasions, he would try to somehow or other seduce her into having sex with him. Although her husband was so poor he had to go out begging, she was so chaste and faithful to her husband, she would never even consider the offerings of this wealthy man. He would sometimes send other female messengers to ask her, "You come, you could live in his palace. He will give you ornaments and jewels and the finest foods. He will make you like a queen. You just come." She would not come. Never. She wouldn't even look at the face of this rascal. He was so frustrated. Generally, very, very egoistic, wealthy people think they can control anyone with their money. And usually they can. But he could not control this woman. He was offering her beautiful, beautiful treasures. But she was satisfied just chanting the Lord's name with her husband in utter poverty. But on this day, she began to think that my life belongs to my Guru Maharaj. If he does not get good prasad, then my life is useless. He has come to my house. He is hungry. I must feed him. I must give him what is worthy. So as Ramanujacharya was taking his bath, she very quietly went out the back door of the house, and she went to that rich rascal's house, and she said, "Tonight I will come and meet you and fulfill whatever you want me to do, providing you send nice arrangements for me to cook an opulent feast for my spiritual master, because I cannot allow him to go hungry." So this rich man was very happy. He gave up hope in this beautiful woman. He was so frustrated because he could not buy her with his money. Now he was thinking, "Aha, things have changed." He said, "I will certainly send you everything you want." So she went home and he sent all sorts of wonderful, wonderful opulent bhoga. And she cooked it very carefully. And then she served this beautiful feast to Ramanujacharya and all of his followers. And they were eating and eating and eating. They were enjoying like anything. It was cooked with such devotion. They were wondering, how is it possible that such a poor person as Lakshmi, her husband's not even here, she has made such a feast. Meanwhile, just as he finished his prasad, her husband arrived. And he saw that Ramanujacharya had eaten such a wonderful, wonderful feast of various opulent dishes of Krishna's prasad. And he knew that there's nothing in the house. So he asked his wife, "How did you do this? What happened?" She put her head down in shame, tears of shame in her eyes. She said, "I have to tell you what I have done. That very materialistic, sinful rascal that is so attracted to me, I have promised him that I will come to see him tonight if he arranged for the food for me to cook for our Guru Maharaj. Because I could not tolerate thinking that our Guru Maharaj has come to our house and we have nothing to offer." When the husband heard this, he began to dance in ecstasy. He said, "How fortunate I am that by the cause of the supreme mercy of Lord Narayan, I have a wife like you. Ultimately, Krishna is the only Purusha, and he is represented by the spiritual master. Therefore, we are all simply meant for the pleasure of Krishna through Guru Maharaj's desire. The fact that you have been willing to do this, to serve our Guru Maharaj, I consider you the very, very embodiment of chastity, because you are so loyal to the enjoyment of Lord Vishnu and Guru. How fortunate I am to be in the association of such a great saintly person with such pure, unalloyed desire to serve as you." So he was so happy, dancing and dancing. Then he took his wife to Ramanujacharya. And he explained to Ramanujacharya what his wife had done. Ramanujacharya gave his remnants to the two of them, and they ate nice prasad. Then Ramanujacharya said, "You go and bring my remnants, which I have already eaten. You bring them to this rich man." So they said, "All right." So they took a nice box of all Ramanujacharya's maha maha prasad. And the husband said, "Now you go in alone. I should not go with you, because the evening is coming and he wants to be alone with you." So she went into the rich man's house and she explained to this rascal man that, "I want you to take the remnants of my Guru Maharaj's prasad before anything else." So he started eating the prasad. Soon he ate all the prasad. And just by eating the prasad, his heart became completely purified. And he said, "I am such a sinful person. I wanted to enjoy you for all these long days. But you are such a surrendered soul. You are willing to give up even your chastity by material sense just to serve your Guru Maharaj." He said, "Now I want to honor you and worship you like my own mother. Please give me your blessings. You are such a saintly person. And I'll give you any amount of wealth you want, but I do not want to touch you. I want to adore you and worship you. But please, I want to meet your Guru Maharaj, who has invoked such sentiments of pure devotion in your heart." So Lakshmi, her husband, and this wealthy rascal went to Ramanujacharya. And he fell at Ramanujacharya's lotus feet, surrendered to him, and begged him for initiation. Ramanujacharya accepted him. And then this rich man wanted to offer Bharadraj and his wife all sorts of wealth. He said, "There's no reason for you to be in so much shortage and so much suffering in your life. Your house is so poor. There's no facilities. You have to go out and beg every day. You take these things and at least live in devotional service comfortably." So Ramanujacharya told, "Yes, you should take what he's giving you. There's no reason for you to have to physically suffer. You're both wonderful devotees. You live nice and comfortable." When Bharadraj Acharya heard this, he became very much disturbed in mind. He fell at the lotus feet of Ramanujacharya and begged him, "Please, please, I do not want anything. I am completely satisfied just serving your lotus feet. If I take these things, then the chance may be there that I want to enjoy them. I want to always remain with my wife in the most humble position of just being the servant of the servant of your servants. Please, don't make me take any of this wealth. Let me remain a beggar and always remember you in love and devotion." So Ramanujacharya was so happy by the pure desire of his disciple that he embraced him, showed him his great love. As he was embracing him, Yagesh, his rich disciple, he waited all day long. There was a big feast and nice reception. Ramanuja never came. So he found out he was at this very poor peasant Bharadrajacharya's house. So he went there. And when he came, he began to cry. He fell at Sripad Ramanujacharya's lotus feet and said, "I have created an offense. Otherwise, why you said you would come and you did not come? What offense did I do?" Sripad Ramanujacharya said, "You were making wonderful arrangements for me, but you neglected to serve my devotees. To be a Vaishnava means to be the servant of the servant of the servant. If you do not serve my servants properly, you cannot please me, no matter what arrangements you make for my satisfaction. Therefore, you have made a big offense by neglecting to properly honor and serve the Vaishnavas. Therefore, I will not go to your house. When Yajnesh heard this, his heart was broken in lamentation. He said, please, Ramanujacharya, my Guru Maharaj, no, it wasn't because I'm proud of my wealth that I neglected your servants. It's that I was so much excited about your coming that I completely forgot about them. But now I understand the terrible, terrible mistake and apparat I have made by not serving the Vaishnavas, being the servant of the servant of the servant. Please let me make it up and serve you and your devotees. Ramanujacharya said, when I come back from Sri Shaila, then I will visit your house. On another occasion, Sripad Ramanujacharya was with his guru Mahapurnam, serving him so menially. Even though Ramanujacharya himself had so many disciples, he was the greatest, most famous Vaishnava scholar in the entire world. Still, he would be so happy just doing menial, humble service for his Guru Maharaj. So one day, Mahapurna was very pleased with Ramanujacharya. He said, there's a very nice village, city actually, that is close by. And there's a great devotee named Gostipurna who lives there. And he has such deep realization of love of God. How he recites his mantras and chants the mantras. If you learn from him, your life will be perfect. Go there and take initiation from the mantra from him. So Sripad Ramanujacharya walked the distance to that place. And he went before Gostipurna and he said, I desire to receive the mantra from you. Gostipurna said, this mantra is very secret and it is very powerful. He said, let me think about it. You come back another day. So Ramanujacharya went back to Sri Rangam. Meanwhile, in Sri Rangam, there was a big festival. So Gostipurna came for this festival. And the Vijayamurti was on procession. And then the Pujari, he called out loud, Gostipurna, you should give this mantra to Sripad Ramanujacharya. Gostipurna said, but this mantra should only be heard and recited by one who is completely pure in heart and has no material attachments. And the Pujari, who the deity was speaking through, he said, but you do not understand the greatness of Ramanujacharya. He is a completely pure soul. He is fit to make the whole world Krishna conscious and be his disciples. But Gostipurna still would not give him initiation into this mantra. Ramanujacharya came again and again and again. He came 18 times asking for initiation, and every time he was rejected, would not be given the mantra. Finally, Ramanujacharya began to think in his mind that I am so fallen, I am so sinful, I am so offensive. It is due to my misdeeds and my fallen condition that I am not worthy of receiving this mantra. He began to cry piteously. When devotees saw this, they went and told Gostipurna that Ramanujacharya is thinking that he's so fallen and useless in his life, he's just crying and crying and crying. The next time Ramanujacharya came, Gostipurna said, I will give you the mantra. But please know that it is a secret mantra. You should never give this mantra to anyone else. Never speak it to anyone who has even the slightest trace of material desires in their heart. This mantra is so powerful. It is non-different than Lord Narayan himself. Anyone who chants this mantra at the time of death, they will return to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha. Anyone who chants this mantra will become completely purified and attain the abode of the Lord. But please know that this mantra must never be repeated to anyone else. In fact, I have never given this mantra to anyone in the world except you. Then he spoke the mantra into the ear of Sripad Ramanuja Acharya. When Sripad Ramanuja Acharya heard this mantra, he became so filled with ecstatic bliss that he just became effulgent in ecstatic love. He offered his obeisances to the guru. He began to walk. He was with two of his associates, Dasarathi and Kuresh, two of his very close associates and disciples. He was walking back to Sri Rangam. As he was walking back, he started to see the various conditioned fallen souls on the streets, and his heart began to melt in compassion. He was thinking, these people are in such illusion. They are trying to enjoy this material world and suffering birth after birth after birth. They should all go back to Vaikuntha, and I have the mantra that can send them there. So he began to call out loud, I have a great jewel of wealth I want to give everyone. Everyone come to the local temple. I have great wealth that I want to give you. Soon the word spread throughout the entire town. Thousands and thousands of people began to gather, and as more people were coming, Ramanujacharya's happiness was growing more and more and more that he can deliver so many people. When there was masses of human beings assembled at the temple, Ramanujacharya went to the roof of the temple. On the terrace, he said, I have a great jewel I want to give all of you. I am going to give you a mantra. By chanting this mantra, you will be eternally liberated of all sufferings in this material world. You will achieve the ultimate bliss of returning to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha. And everyone was saying, please, please, give us this mantra. Ramanujacharya said, now all of you repeat after me. In great attention and anticipation, their hearts, their ears were open to hear this great mantra. Ramanujacharya called out very loudly, Om Namo Narayanaya. All of these thousands and thousands of people, as loud as they could, together, they all chanted the holy names, Om Namo Narayanaya. Then Ramanujacharya, he said again, Om Namo Narayanaya. All the people very, very loudly filled the whole world with the beautiful sounds of the name. A third time Ramanujacharya said, Om Namo Narayanaya, and everyone repeated. People were so happy. They were thinking, we came here because we were thinking you would give us ornaments or gold or money or good health or good wives. But now we have received a rare jewel. We came expecting some broken pieces of glass. They were all filled with happiness. Thousands of them were coming and taking shelter, offering obeisances at the lotus feet of Sripad Ramanujacharya. Then when they all had left, Ramanujacharya was so blissful that so many thousands of people attained Krishna Bhakti that he wanted to thank his Guru Maharaj for this mercy. He did not consider that he was the doer. He was considering it was all his Guru's mercy. So he went back to his Guru's house. Meanwhile, his Guru Maharaj had just heard, like thunderous sound all over the atmosphere, he heard the secret mantra being chanted. He was completely outraged with anger. Ramanujacharya came back to his guru's house and fell at his guru's feet, and his guru Maharaj, Gostipurna, in terrible anger, he said, get out of here. I do not want to see your face, you rascal. I have committed a great sin by entrusting the sacred mantra to a rascal like you. You have no honor. You have broken your vow. You have vowed not to give it to anyone. And you have loudly cried it out. And now there's thousands of people chanting this mantra. I do not want to see your condemned face. Get out of here.
Hare Krishna.
When Ramanujacharya heard this, then his guru said, because of this offense,
you must suffer birth after birth after birth in hell.
When Ramanujacharya heard this, he was not the slightest bit disturbed. With folded palms and a sweet, humble voice, he said to his Guru Maharaj, I know that because I disobeyed your order, I will have to go to hell. But I am such an insignificant, lowly person. What is the loss to the world if I go to hell? But when I saw all these thousands and thousands of people in the illusion of trying to enjoy material life, you told me that this mantra, whoever chants it sincerely with their lips, will be liberated from all suffering and return to Vaikuntha to serve Lord Narayan. My heart was breaking in compassion for these souls. If they could all go back and enjoy pure love of God with Narayan, then it is certainly worth the price of an insignificant fool like me going to hell. When Gostipurna heard this, immediately all the anger came out of his body. He completely transformed and he began to cry. He embraced Ramanujacharya. With folded hands, he said to Sripada Ramanujacharya, you are my Guru Maharaj and I am your disciple. Never ever have I seen such compassion, such deep surrender to the will of the Lord. Today I accept you as my Guru. Ramanujacharya fell on his knees and prayed at the lotus feet of his Guru Maharaj. No, he said, you are my Guru eternally. I am eternally your servant. Even though I committed a great offense today, I consider that I have achieved the perfection of life because you have just embraced me by your causeless mercy. This is the quality of the compassion of this great Acharya. And there's a story of one of his disciples who had a similar type of compassion and devotion. Quraysh was a grihastha. He had two children and a wife. It is explained that in Kanchipuram, which was the capital of the dynasty of the kings of the Cholas, Chola dynasty, generally all the kings were great devotees of the deity called Varadaraj, who lives in Vishnu Kanchi. They were Vaishnavas. But this one particular king, his name was, I believe, Kolutanga. He was a Shivite and an impersonalist. And he was a very materialistic and envious person. He wanted the whole kingdom to accept Shiva as the supreme. And ultimately, by worshiping Shiva, you can achieve impersonal liberation. So, of course, the Vaishnavas know that Lord Shiva is the greatest of all the Vaishnavas, the greatest of all the demigods, and the greatest worshipable personality who's at the feet of Lord Vishnu. So this king, he decided that Ramanujacharya was such a powerful, powerful Vaishnava. If he accepts Shiva, everyone in the kingdom will accept Shiva as the supreme. Meanwhile, this king had a minister. This minister used to be a disciple of Quraysh. However, this person was such a rascal disciple, he rejected his guru, he became a minister of the king, and he's the one who told the king that Ramanujacharya, he should either be defeated in debate or he should be killed. Then we will make the whole kingdom Shivites. So the king took his guidance, and he decided that there would be a debate. And if Ramanujacharya is defeated, then he will have to become a Shivite and make all of his followers Shivites and preach that Shiva is the supreme everywhere. And if he doesn't lose the debate, he must be killed. And we will get his guru, Mahapurna, with him. So the king sent some of his messengers to Sri Rangam. And Ramanujacharya heard this debate and he understood how dangerous it was. But Ramanujacharya, he accepted, yes, I will come and I will debate in the presence of the king. But Quraysh understood how malicious and terrible this king was. He said, Ramanujacharya, your teachings are purifying the entire earth. I am insignificant. Please, I beg you, one benediction. The king will kill you. He will definitely kill you. Give me your clothes. You take my clothes as a grihastha and escape. The king doesn't know what you look like. I will go, and I want the honor of giving my life for you. So Ramanujacharya, hearing how sincerely Koresh was making this request, he accepted. He put on the white cloth of a grihastha and secretly went out the back way and escaped from Sri Rangam. Meanwhile, Koresh, who was a grihastha, had Ramanujacharya's sannyas garbs and his danda. And Mahapurna said, I'm too old to try to escape. Let me just go for this debate. So the two of them went before the king, Kalutunga, and the king said to them that Lord Shiva is the supreme. He is the supreme, absolute, greatest of all the gods, and no one else should be worshipped but him. So you should give up all your devotion to Vishnu, and you should surrender to Shiva. He is the greatest of the great. So Koresh, he said, even Drona is greater than Shiva. Now in those days, there was measurements of weight, and one weight was called the Shiva, and the other was called the Drona. And the Drona was equal to two or three Shivas, something like that. So he was making a joke. When he said this, that even a Drona is greater than a Shiva, the king became outraged. How dare you speak this blasphemy? And then all the pundits started attacking Koresh and Mahapurna with all sorts of word jugglery and scriptural argumentation. And Koresh and Mahapurna effortlessly, completely destroyed all the pundits' arguments until they were totally defeated. Then the king said, they must die. If you don't accept right now, then you must be killed. They did not accept. Koresh was thinking, to die in the service of my Guru Maharaj is the perfection of my life. Now, many, many years before, when the king was only a boy of about 8 years old, his sister was haunted by a ghost, terrible ghost. And they called all these great, great Mayavad gurus and everyone else to try, but no one could get this ghost out of her. Then they called Ramanujacharya, and he just chanted the holy names of the Lord and made the ghost go away. That was his power. So the king was thinking, he saved my sister, so I cannot kill him, but I will torture him and poke out his eyes. So the king ordered for Mahapurna and Koresh to be severely tortured in the most terrible, painful ways. And at the end of their torture, they poked their eyes until they were totally blind. Meanwhile, while Koresh was being tortured in this way, he was in his heart thanking Lord Narayan for giving him such an honorable service. How fortunate I am. I'm allowed to suffer this torture and blindness to serve my Guru Maharaj. What a great, great blessing this is. He was in bliss. Eventually, they went back to Sri Rangam, but Ramanujacharya was hiding in exile in another place. While they were on their way to Sri Rangam, Mahapurna, he was so old, the torture and the blindness that was inflicted upon him was too much. So he laid on the side of the road with his head in Koresh's lap, and he said, it is time for me now to give up this body. With the holy name of Narayan on my lips and the thought of my Guru Maharaj Jamunacharya in my heart, I will leave this world. Please give my millions and millions obeisances to my disciple, Ramanujacharya, when you see him again. And then he gave up his life and went back to Vaikuntha. Sometime later, Koresh, who was utterly blind, with his wife and two children, he went to the place where Ramanujacharya was in hiding. By the way, that king, soon after torturing Koresh and Mahapurna, he contracted a terrible, deadly disease. He suffered and he died due to his offenses. When Ramanujacharya saw Koresh blind, so much compassion was in his heart that he has done this for me. This torture was meant for me, but he took it on my behalf. He felt such love and gratitude to his disciple. He told that you should go back to Kanchipuram. You should go before the Lord Varadraj, the deity in the temple, and you should request him to give you your sight back, and he will certainly give it. So he went back to Kanchipuram. And all day long, Koresh was singing beautiful bhajans and kirtans and worshipping the deity. Then the deity spoke to him. He said that you have pleased me by your pure devotion. Please ask for any benediction you desire, and I promise you I will fulfill it. Koresh prayed to the deity. That ex-disciple of mine who rejected me and poisoned the king to convince him to kill my guru, Ramanujacharya, and who is the cause of my being tortured in blindness, please deliver that person from all suffering and give him your mercy. The deity of Varadraj said, your desire is already fulfilled. The next day, Koresh began to perform his bhajan and his worship. The deity again spoke to him and said, please ask me any benediction and I promise you I will fulfill it. Koresh's heart, melting with compassion and forgiveness, he said, the king, Kolutunga, such an offensive, terrible person, I pray, my dear Lord, the only desire I have is give him your causeless mercy and deliver him. The deity said, it is already fulfilled. Meanwhile, Ramanujacharya heard from where he was about the benedictions that Koresh was asking for. So he sent a message to Koresh. He said, your body is my property. You have no right to neglect my property. I want you to understand that your eyes are not yours, but mine. And these two valuable jewels, I want you to ask the Lord to give them back to you. When Koresh heard this message, he was in ecstasy. He was thinking, Ramanujacharya accepts my body as his property. That means he has accepted me as his surrendered servant. This is the perfection of my life. He went back to the deity of Varadraj, began singing bhajans and kirtans and worshipping with pure love. Again the deity spoke. Please ask any benediction I promise you I will fulfill. Koresh, in utter humility, he spoke that my Guru Maharaj entrusted me with two very valuable jewels that I somehow or other lost, but they are my Guru's property. Please return them so that I can use them in his service. Then the Lord Narayan began to speak. He said that my devotee, because he has surrendered to me, I am his life and soul. He is my servant unconditionally. And when a devotee serves me with pure devotion, I want to serve him and supply him whatever he needs for his devotional service. That is the ecstasy of the love between my devotee and myself. I am captured by the love of my devotee, and my devotee is captured by my love. When Koresh heard this, he fell unconscious in ecstasy. Then when he came back to consciousness, he could see perfectly because his eye had been restored. He began to praise the glories of his Guru Maharaj's mercy. Through the life of Sripad Ramanujacharya, we understand the pure principles of humility and complete surrender to the will of the Lord. On this very auspicious day, let us bow at his lotus feet and celebrate by loudly chanting the holy names. We should all aspire to follow in the holy footsteps of these great acharyas. Today we are very fortunate, a special guest has come amongst us. His Grace Sriman Nitai Gorsundar Prabhu. Your good wife's name is? Ananta Rupini Devi Mataji. They were for many, many years president of the temple in Paris, France, worshipping their beautiful lordship, Sri Sri Radha Paras Ishwari. And France has been one of the most difficult places for preaching in the history of Hare Krishna movement. and Ananta Rupini and Nitai Gaurasundar Prabhus, they were running this center with such incredible determination and enthusiasm, steadfastness, year after year after year. This time he is one of the deputy GBCs helping to improve the quality of the entire ISKCON movement for Srila Prabhupada's beloved disciple of Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And we're so happy that he has come to bless us. Everyone, please welcome him to Sri Sri Radha Giridhari Mandir and his good wife. For Ananta Rupini Mataji, please welcome. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.